What's up, everybody? This is the Brain Department. I'm Matt. This used to be Main Life. Now it's the Brain Department. I did change the name of the podcast, so thanks for sticking with me. Actually, a couple things I wanted to talk about, and it's not, some of you might know, I'm not often one to prepare remarks, but I am absolutely, I'm blown away to learn how many listens I actually have. I wasn't really taking this very seriously. It's just sort of something fun I do. You know, when I sit outside in the front step on nice nights and I look out into the main stars because I live in the woods. And I usually have an adult beverage with me. Like tonight I have a delicious gin and tonic. And I just sort of ramble. Being that, I only look at views or likes or claps, you know, as it is in the Anchor app. I never really went to the website or the mobile website even to log in and see the dashboard that exists to see how I'm doing, see how many views or listens, excuse me, there are. And I didn't realize it broke them down per platform. So there's, you know, just the Anchor model, but then because of the distribution that Anchor puts out, you know, there's iTunes on iOS. There's Pocket Cast, which is what I use for my podcasting app. There's, you know, Spotify and Radiotopia. There's a lot of different distribution channels that this puts out. I had no idea. I checked a couple days ago, and I had, like, over 2,000 listens. That's, like, insane to me. I thought I had, like, 20 tops. So I'm blown away, and I'm very humbled. And if you're listening to this, thank you. I really do appreciate it. It's hard to gauge sometimes when you're only, like, I only thought people would be listening on the Anchor app, and I wasn't getting a lot of feedback. Like, on Anchor, you can, you know, clap, and you get notifications, and people favorite your station, and those kind of things. But if you're listening outside of that, like, if you're listening to this on Spotify, which apparently is my biggest, biggest net for catching listens, thank you. But, yeah, I guess you wouldn't have a way for me to really know that I'm listening, or you're listening to me. So, if you're out there, thank you. I do appreciate it. Hard to believe that the ramblings of myself would create that much interest, but here we are. Anyway, that was it. I just wanted to say thank you. And what got me looking at it, actually, was sort of point two that I wanted to discuss a little bit. And I'm really pleased that they did this. Anchor just announced the monetization method for podcasts, which is super cool. So you can donate directly to content creators, you know, to their channels, and just, you know, give them a little bit of money, a little bit of cash, if you like what they're doing and you want them to continue to support it, which is great. It's sort of, it reminds me of the Patreon platform, at least in how it's sort of been rolled out. You can sort of monthly donate. It's nice that they kind of built it into Anchor, so you don't have to go through the Patreon network, and I'm not sure if that's good or bad. I mean, time will tell. I mean, Patreon's a pretty big, expansive network. Maybe strategically that would have been better for creators, or maybe it's worse for, you know, the podcast host, Anchor. I don't know the details of that, but it reminds me a lot, if you've ever donated on Patreon, to creators. If you don't know what Patreon is, it's spelled, it's kind of hard to pronounce, I find, P-A-E-T-R-O-N, Patreon, I think that's how you spell it. You can donate to creators, well, let's say podcasts or YouTubers or, I guess, video game streamer, you know, anybody that does, that creates content, they can set up a Patreon page and you can pledge money to them based on, you know, monthly thing, or if it's like YouTube videos, like, I'll give you a dollar every time you put out a YouTube video. And then, you know, if they get 1,000 people doing this, a dollar each, that's $1,000 a video. That's not so bad. There's different donation levels, and it's nice to see Anchor mirroring that, excuse me. And, yeah, so that got me looking at the actual anchor.fm page of mine, and, like I said, blown away. So, at the level of interest that I have, so thank you again, I am humbled. Just for the heck of it, I did activate the donation page. If you feel like you want to, I truly am grateful, and I'll keep on trying to be interesting. And if you don't, that's cool too. No big deal. But that's what I was wondering about. Anyway, I did have some other things, but I'm going to like create another segment here because this one seems to be rambling on pretty long. The next thing I wanted to talk about was mice, believe it or not. Yes, mice, like as in mouse, those tiny little critters that... they're really annoying right now, actually. But sometimes they're cute, sometimes they're snake food. And sometimes they're in my house. With the basis of the previous segment that I was just, you know, going on about how lovely it is to have so many more listens than I thought there were, I wonder how many of you are in New England. It seems to be that for some reason that I'm sure there's a reason, but I don't know it yet, mice are everywhere. The mice population has exploded this year. And I didn't really notice it until this past week. So here's what's happened over the past couple of months. So as I say all the time, we live in the woods, and there have been mice in the yard, and I've actually never seen or paid attention. It's like field mice, and we have a fenced-in yard, and our cats go out in the fenced-in yard. And it's, you know, a decent size. It's, I don't know how big to say it is. It's like 100 by 100 feet. You know, so it's not huge, but it's enough. They get to run around and stretch, and they, you know, chase, you know, moths and grasshoppers, and, you know, it's fun. When we moved here 3 years ago, didn't realize the cats were so good at catching mice, and also didn't realize there were so many mice in the yard. So they would kill mice every couple of days. I'd get one and be like, oh, that's gross, okay, and don't do that. And then they started doing it and kept on doing it, and then my landlord, you know, pointed out, like, good, then they won't get in the house. And we're like, oh, okay, well, that's what they do. And they started catching moles, so they weren't tearing up the yard, and that was nice, too. So the cats are kind of keeping the rodent population in check that are, you know, immediately next to the house. You know, they don't go out in the woods, and they don't just kill random things. It's really more of a, you know, we tolerate the killing from the cats just as a way to keep the rodents outside the house. And everything was fine for 2.5 years. My landlord actually mentioned that he wasn't finding mice in the traps he had set in the basement. Because we have, like, our house is on, like, a foundation. But on, like, the front, the ground is level with the front door. And the back, you can walk into the basement. So the mice were getting around the door sometimes and then get inside. And he commented he hadn't been finding mice in the traps. So that was, the cats were keeping that in check. So that was great. We thought, perfect, no big deal. This spring, however, some things changed. I went to change the oil on my car and realized there's, like, debris in here. There's, like, acorn shells and pine needles on top of the engine. That's not stuff that just randomly blows up underneath. It's like, and then I realized, looking around, like, there are little mouse footprints on top of some of, like, the air tubing and the plastic ductwork for the HVAC system. Like, there's been a mouse up here. So I didn't see any in my car. Not at first. I saw a bunch more tracks on my wife's car because her car is much newer and it's much cleaner. And also with newer cars, annoyingly, there's a lot more plastic for dust to get on. And you can see the mouse prints better, but that's a different thing with the plastic. But we actually were getting mice in her car. And they kept getting into snacks. So we stopped leaving food in the car, and quickly the mice stopped going in there. But we found mouse poop, like, on the floor and the seats, and, like, they got into a backpack. It was gross. So we had to clean everything out. And I didn't realize, later on, same thing. I found mouse poop in the bottom of, in my back seat. I don't go in the back seat because I'm the driver, so I didn't realize. So this was really weird. Like, this never happened to me anywhere I've lived, ever. Never had mice in the car. So that was weird. Now, you know, we hear mice in the walls every now and then, or we thought we did, and we're like, okay, there's a mouse in the wall, but it's like, it's one, it's no big deal. Like, maybe it's two, the opposite sides of the house. So we realized some of them were getting into the home. But we didn't see any. Until, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago, the cats realized they were getting in to, like, some cupboards in the kitchen. And the cats were clever, and they would open the door, and they'd, like, chase the mouse out, and they'd, like, chase around the house. And then sometimes they caught one or two and actually, like, pinned it. And then I was able to grab the mouse with a paper towel alive and run it outside and, like, throw it into the woods. Like, don't come back. I didn't think it came back. But then they caught another one, and the same thing happened a couple days later. I was like, okay, this same mouse came in, so we're going to go even further. So in the middle of the night, I'm walking further out and throwing it further away from the house. Like, it won't come back now. Okay. Then it happened again. Another mouse. This time, they're just chasing around the house, playing, and the cat catches it. And I'm like, oh, great. Now I can get the towel, and the cat lets it go right in front of me. I'm like, what are you doing, cat? And then they start chasing each other. I'm like, oh, okay. The cat is now thinking this is a toy. This is not good. So the cat is chasing this mouse around the house. And it's like middle of the night this keeps happening, like 1, 2 in the morning. And I'm half asleep. And so then the cat chases this mouse into my bedroom, right? And then mouse goes right under the bed. Cat stops short of the bed, looks underneath, looks up at me. And it almost looks like the cat shrugs. And he's like, eh, I guess we're done. And the cat trots on off out of the room. And I'm like, what are you doing? I had many swear words for the cat. But I didn't think the mouse would come on the bed, so I cursed at it. And I didn't see it, and I didn't hear it, so I went to bed. I figured the cat will catch it at some point. And all this time, I'm thinking there's one or two mice. So finally, I said, okay, this is enough is enough. We're getting mouse poop in, like, the cupboards. I'm like, this is bad. This hasn't happened before. So we got some mouse traps. We got some old-fashioned ones with the wire. And then we got some new-fashioned ones that look like giant plastic, like, bag clips. Like, you click on like a bag of chips, but they're really big. And they're resettable, and they're super sensitive, and you don't have to touch the mouse to get them out. It's great. So the old-fashioned ones, we put peanut butter on them. The new ones, we put peanut butter on them. We put them all in the same area. Came back the next morning. The peanut butter had been eaten off entirely of the old-fashioned ones, and in the new ones, there were two dead mice. I was like, okay, one and two. We're done. Just on the off chance there's more, I'll put more out. I'll do it again tonight. So that was a week ago. I've caught two mice every single night this week. So we've caught 14 mice in the house, which is terrifying in some regards. And like, that's just, we're just super annoyed. I mean, what can you do? Live in the woods. You know, it's not a super new house that we're living in. So mice are going to get in sometimes, but I'm just really, I started asking around at work once we got to 10 mice in a week, and everybody, people that live in the woods also, because some people live in the city in Portland, people that live out in the woods have said, oh yeah, the mice have been really bad this year, and I can't figure out why. It was super cold this winter. Usually that kind of thing will, you know, kill off rodents and, you know, species like this, but it just seems so weird. So anyway, all of this story is to sum up the question of, if you know why the mice population has exploded in New England, specifically my region of Maine, I would love if you were to call in or write me or tweet me. I'm at MaineBeard, like Maine the state, and Beard, like I have a wonderful beard on my face, at MaineBeard, Instagram, Twitter, any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I want to know. Please let me know. Otherwise, I have one other thing to ramble about. So, yeah, I guess I'll get to that. Technical difficulties. Please stand by. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to talk about was running. Like Forrest Gump runs, but slower. He runs fast. All right, running. Here we go. I hate and love running. And I think a lot of people feel that way. So here's my running story, anecdote, philosophy. I don't know. I hate working out. Just full stop, end of sentence. You know, when you're done working out, you feel good, you feel accomplished. So I used to go to the gym, and it was drudgery just trying to get myself to go. And I just stopped and, you know, stuff happens. I have a small child now. She's a toddler and she's lovely. And I realized I want to be around, you know, long enough to see her make a life. And, you know, I want to be alive to walk her down the aisle. And, you know, should that happen, I want to make sure I'm there for those things. And that's a long way away. You know, she's not even three yet. But, you know, you got to start preparing for those things. You know, I want to make sure that I'm alive for the next 30 years, 40, 50 years. You know, whatever. I want to make sure I lay that groundwork. And I can't lay that groundwork then. I've got to build that foundation now because I haven't done it before. So I run. This past winter and spring, I made a concerted effort to actually start, like, preparing to run. So at work, whenever it wasn't frigid, you know, anything above like 20, I would go up for walks on my breaks. We get 2 breaks a day and lunch, and I would eat lunch really fast and go for a walk. So every day I would go for a walk. It's about 0.6 miles, 0.65, almost 0.7, depending on the path I would take. And I would do that 3 times a day. So I've been doing that since, let's say, February. If the trail, the path, it's a park, if it's not covered in snow, I would go walking. And I would vary either walking on the paved part or the soft grass part. Early on, and I was trying to build up my foot strength and my leg strength because, you know, I just wasn't exercising at all, so I knew I had to build that stuff up. Here's a good time to point out that I haven't been able to run in running shoes since, God, I don't know, 7th grade, 6th grade, you know, when I was very young. That's when I ran cross country when I was 6th grade, so I was like 12, and I was pretty fast. That was good. And I never did it again because I didn't really enjoy running, but I was really good. I was fast and everything was fine, but I played baseball was my passion, so I played baseball. And you run a little bit in baseball, but not very much. But you wore cleats in baseball. Never really wore running shoes for running. I would try to, and it just always sucked. It was horrible. I got into cycling a bit in my early 20s. Which is actually how I broke my back. That's a fun story, but I'll tell it some other time. When cycling, though, I didn't go full out and get, like, crazy running equipment, cycling equipment, like the shoes that clip in. I didn't go that far. But I did wear my firmest shoes possible. I wore Adidas Sambas that had, they were flat, they had almost no cushioning or give, because when you wear running shoes when you cycle, some of you might be able to confirm this, all that squishiness in the shoe is energy lost when you're pushing down on the pedals. And you can literally feel the sole compress. And it's just harder to pedal. You need a really firm surface. So you don't lose that all that energy just in your shoes that you're trying to push down through the pedals, through the gears, through the wheel, you know, to propel yourself. And that was, you know, early 20s when I really started to realize that there was energy lost in squishy shoes. And so, that was also about the time when Nike came out with their barefoot, their run-free sneakers, the first vision of them. They were like socks or like slippers on top, like very thin nylon, and this really constructed but very loose and fluid-moving sole platform that really forced your foot to move in a much more natural barefoot way, but with a shoe on. I got these and I heeded all the warnings. They said there were lots of warnings, like, really don't go out and wear these right away. Your legs will, you really need to build muscle and work on them. And I believed them, and oh my God, were they right. Wearing for an hour once, and the next day your legs are sore. You wear for 2 hours the next day, and your legs are sore for 2 days. It was a lot of buildup. But man, ever since I started this, I have fantastic balance. I almost never fall. But anyway, that's a different part of the story. So for, let's say, about 15 years now, I've been into this barefoot thing. So I would run in these barefoot sneakers, and everything was great. And my foot, you know, it was okay with the running, but my feet felt great. I got a lot of strength in them. I had really good balance. And that was that. More recently, let's say 5, 6, 7 years ago, the actual barefoot shoes came out. Vibram Five Fingers. You might know them better as the toe shoes. They look like a glove. Like your hands look a glove, but for your feet. You could see all the toes. Every toe has a hole. So I got these, or I saw these, and I was immediately in love. I'm like, that's perfect. So I got a pair, and oh man, no support whatsoever. Your feet really have to work and get stronger, and I loved wearing them, and my feet would be so sore at the end of the day, but my back felt amazing, and it just felt like your feet were actually working like they were supposed to. So I started wearing these out and about, or sometimes to work. I worked in a retail store all the time, so it was okay to be a little goofy like that. And it was great, and I'd go running in them. But the thing about running barefoot is you actually really have to work up to this. Not just with the barefoot, like, sneakers with the big cushiony soles that force you to move, but this was, like, no protection. And I didn't do that. So I think, I didn't go to a doctor for this, but everything that I read said, I'm pretty sure I caused a stress fracture in one of my feet by wearing these running shoes and just going out running too far, too fast. But that's really the only way I've been able to run for the past, let's say, 6 or 8 years is with these barefoot shoes. And so when I got the stress fracture, I would obviously stop running. But then I'd do it again the next year and I'd try, okay, I'm going to go slow this time. But then, you know, your cardiovascular system, your heart feels good and you're running and everything feels good. But your feet can't keep up. Your legs aren't there. So my fatal flaw was always by August, I would start feeling it in my feet. I would cause, like, sort of re-cause the stress in the stress fracture, and it started to hurt, and I'd have to stop. So I would really only run for like a month or two out of the year. So it's been like on and off the past couple of years. So that's why this year I started with very low construction, like work shoes. And that's why I'm going on these walks, you know, for way, way early in the year. So this was my plan, like to really build up. So I never used to go on walks. So 3 walks a day is way more than I used to do. So this is all purposeful, building up muscle and leg and foot strength and movement. Okay, so that's been going great. So I've been running barefoot with the barefoot shoes. I've got 2 pairs now. And I would go running and I'd go walking and everything's been great. It's been very, very good. Cut to, I also heard about this book called Born to Run. There's a lot of YouTube videos about it. The writer, gosh, I can't remember his name. Chris Douglas, I think. I'm pretty sure I talked about this in another podcast. Talked about running barefoot and how it's much more natural and how humans are born to run. And the basis of this is that this tribe of native Mexicans in the Copper Canyons that just run forever. Like hundreds of miles, 100 miles at a time, like it's nothing. And it's just crazy. They just go and they go and they go. And they're in the middle of the Mexican desert. You know, so there's very little water. There's not a ton of food around that they survive on. It's like corn and chia seeds and like homebrew beer. And I guess the only protein they get is like mice that they, you know, catch and harvest themselves. And it just, it was amazing to me to see that there's this sort of lineage of humans that are still living as if 500 years ago, you know, like nothing has passed, like there's no new technology. But these people run in these sandals that are very basic. They're just enough to protect their feet from the sharp rocks. There's total movement. Your foot behaves totally naturally. And they're just strapped onto your feet. It's great. So I got a pair of these sandals. This brand that I picked out is called Shamas. A character in this book has a company called Luna Sandals. I was looking at the Lunas, but they're a little bit expensive. I think for what I was looking for, the Shamas are a little bit less expensive. They're both made in the USA, which is awesome. The Shamas are made in California. So I've been really happy with these. They're super thin. They're like 6 or 7 millimeters thick or thin, and There's like a little leather footbed on them. They're great. So I've been running in these, and it's been just fantastic. So I've been thinking a lot about that, running, and how I wanted to share that with people. I'm going to keep on running and keep on talking about it, and especially barefoot running, or running in running sandals, which whenever people have been seeing my sandals, I've had them for a little over a week now. They have say, "Hey, nice sandals." And I say, "Hey, thanks. They're actually for running." And they go, "Huh?" So I'm trying to share that. So yes, you can run in sandals, and I think it's actually much better for you, but you got to build up to it. So that's my show. Thanks for listening. And, you know, comment if you can, or like, or subscribe, or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Thanks again. I'll catch you on the next one.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.